Welcome to Post-Traumatic Thriving, where we explore life's toughest issues, along with the art, science, and stories of resilience. Please be advised that our guests share their raw stories of addiction, abuse, crime, and tragedy, along with tips to survive and thrive. And now, here are our hosts, Dr. Randall Bell and Tanya Brown.
Welcome back to Post-Traumatic Thriving. I am your host, Dr. Randall Bell. I'm joined by Tanya Brown. Hi, Tanya.
Hey, Randy. Hi, everyone.
And Pastor Phil. I've gotten over the calling you Dr. Phil. Right.
The real Dr. Phil, please.
The real Dr. Phil. I'm sure Dr. Phil is a wonderful guy, but your story is like so crazy interesting.
Yeah.
And what, clearly different directions you went.
We lived life
blocks from each other. Right. And here we go. So to quickly recap, Pastor Phil, you were living a idyllic Orange County life till about 10. Then your dad goes off the rails, abuses your mom. Prior to this, life was cool. And then he takes off with another woman, devastates you, devastates the family. You funnel your anger towards your mom, which was probably misplaced anger, another kind of dimension of trauma. Mm-hmm. Then you are hurting inside. Every little boy wants their dad there and present and being a good guy, and here your dad doesn't do that, and so you mask the pain the way a lot of people do, drugs and alcohol, and machoism, and you can call them crews or gangs, whatever you want to call them.
Yeah, exactly.
And then you have your heart broken with your buddy Max. We'll track him down.
Yeah,
we'll find out.
We'll find out. Yeah, exactly.
And you're sitting there. And you see your girlfriend driving by with your best friend. That's heartbreaking.
Ooh.
Yeah, that's a tough one.
It still hurts.
Yeah.
At that age, it's horrible.
Yeah. That stuff does hurt. And then you go to prison and spend some time there. And then you are invited to a religious service and you accept Christianity. You become convert to Christianity and follow Jesus and all that good stuff. And then you get out of prison and then you start a church. It's on fire, but you have three women that are not so happy with you for whatever reasons. They start litigation that goes nowhere for them, but it puts you through
hell
and plus all the reputational damage. And that's stressful. And hey, the story just keeps going. And
living in Venice.
And then you are living in Venice, and then you're a big name on television shows, and then you hate God in Venice, and then somebody comes along and takes you to a better place. Right. And then
you've been busy.
2008.
Oh, I get up every day. Yes.
Yeah. The last big part of the story, as I go through the timeline from my memory, is the cops raid your house, the SWAT teams in 2008 because of a bar fight incident. And you're kind of poking the pig with driving around with Hell's Angels and a lot of the paraphernalia of gang activity, but there's no gang activity. It's just some guys having fun on their bikes.
Promoting the church.
Yeah, just motorcycle enthusiasts.
Yeah.
We could call it there's that. Like Bibles in your saddlebag.
Yeah. And so you beat the there's 3 days in jail that turns your life around. Anything else, big points I missed in terms of recapping your story you want to share?
No, that sums it up pretty well. Like I said, we were going big, going strong, and all of a sudden, boom, what goes up must come down. Yeah. And it sure did.
Yeah, and you had a couple of visits with our old friend Pride in there. Which I noticed you said.
Yeah, that's, I really got to know the character and how sneaky he or she is. And I takes me all the way back. I know Pride goes before the fall. Pride goes before destruction. On paper, it's easy. You get to know it. Mm-hmm. But there's just something about my own name, something about my own life. And they call it narcissistic behavior. He colored a lot of different things like that. All I know, it was all bad.
It is bad, but let me ask you a question. If you were to revisit those moments, and I'm really asking this question for somebody who's listening that says, hey, let's be honest, I'm narcissistic. Let's be honest. Mm-hmm. I've got pride. You know, I have some accomplishments that make me feel like, hey, I'm too cool. What would you wish you had said to yourself back then when you had these falls over, trips over your pride? Or what advice would you give to someone in that?
Well, I used to use the cop-out excuse. I was at the wrong place at the wrong time. Mm-hmm. But then God showed me how he put the red flags there. He put the do not enter signs, the go the other way, danger ahead. All it didn't matter what it was. You know, when people say he's a God of a second chance. No, he's a God of thousands of chances, because I'm one of them. I'm one of those black sheep people that he's had favor on, all that stuff. But just never, for me, the only thing I wish I would have done is been, you know, played through the whole movie and seen what the conclusion would be and seeing how it would affect my wife, how it would affect my kids, how it would affect friends and people. Didn't just didn't realize the responsibility of to whom much is given, much is required. I just knew it in words. And sometimes I'm not sure if anybody ever does. I've taught people for years, a wise man learns from mistakes, but a wiser one learns the mistakes of others. But I never learned from the mistakes of others. I had to learn myself. And I'm not sure if any of us do. Maybe they do. I'm just not aware of their situation. So to be able to see what really, how we affect others' lives, that's the biggest thing I wish I would have paid attention to.
Wow.
It's kind of what JC says too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Our first guest.
Yeah. Wonderful advice. I gotta, I'm going to stick that on my refrigerator. Yeah. Wise men learn from their mistakes, and wiser men learn from the mistakes of others. I never heard that before. That's brilliant.
Yeah. It just really, you know, just so that's why being connected to people, you know, is so important, staying in touch and out of the mouth of babes, knowing that everybody can, everybody, like today is totally a blessing. You know, I mean, for me, this trip, this time, you know, if you guys didn't get anything, I know what I got out of it. That's what's cool about it. I come hungry, and anybody I'm meeting with or situation with, and take everything as a, you know, especially like I says, because I count this, you know, this the happy hour, the last 2 minutes of the game. You know, I can see the finish line, that type of thing.
Well, I can tell you, I'm glad you're having a good experience.
We're having
a fantastic experience talking to you.
We learned from all of our guests. It's just, we walk away going, wow, that was amazing.
Yeah.
You know, whenever I do speaking, I do mention pride, and I always say pride is that 5-letter word that will always kill you.
Yeah.
It will always kill you.
Well, we're always looking, you know, for something, you know, nowadays in the work that I do, it's always fentanyl, but that's why I always go back to the love drug, you know, you know, relationships,
connection,
you know, that type of thing, other people. And just like I said, it's when I was post-traumatic thriving, I go, oh, this is a new world for me.
Right.
Yeah.
Just not a lot of words I'm used to do post. I got to remember what post is. Traumatic.
You know what that is.
You know, one of the cool things, just to throw out, you might have heard this a million times, but one of my life coaches, Tim Story, he talks about the kids, how they play, they scream, they shout, you know, and they're full of life when you're a kid. And back when they had toy stores open, you go there and they want Mr. I can do everything. And I mean, like that, nobody wants to buy the Mr. You know, my house has got repossessed, or right. Mrs. You know, I went bankrupt, stuff like that. The kids are always dreaming. They always want to be a winner and all that kind of stuff. And kids, you don't have to tell them to make noise. They're always making noise and shh, put in your inside voice, all that stuff. But kids are, they got to shout in their life. And then life comes along and drama, trauma, whatever you call it, knocks the shout out of them. And then they get quiet, depressed, discouraged, head down. You know, like I said, they want to get into bed, boom. Get back into mama's womb where it was all safe.
Right.
And that's what it reminds me of, you know, traumatic. And like you were sharing, Randall, like it says, all the way through our life. I mean, I still see a redhead. Hey, it still goes up. That people say, you should be over it. Hey, okay. Easy for you to say.
Easy.
You know, but that's highlights in life, you know. big thing. It'd be like climbing Mount Everest. There's certain things, you know, but you got to remember to bring along, you know, bring some extra air, you know, bring an extra blanket, you know, whatever.
You got to be prepared for those.
You better
those
believe moments. It. Yeah. Yep. And it needs a team because you're going to forget stuff.
Absolutely.
All of us got blind spots.
Yep. Yeah. All of us.
That's all the truth for sure. Yeah. Post-traumatic thriving. I mean, what I find really unsurmountable is just exactly what we're doing today. There's nothing to me more fascinating than the hero's journey. Somebody who's been through life and really been through the meat grinder and then ends up doing stuff that's far more amazing than, you know, all the trust fund babies. And not true. That they don't have trauma too. Right. Everybody does, true. but they do just amazing things.
Yeah. Well, just the word like alive and thrive. I mean, mm-hmm. just the whole word thriving, you know, it's like, man,
I didn't think about thriving. You know, that's what we know, PTSD, we know post-traumatic stress disorders, but the thriving. Yeah. When Randy wrote that book and I was like, God, that's brilliant. People need to know how to thrive after all the chaos in life. And it doesn't matter how old you are when you get there. It doesn't matter.
Yeah. And what you just kind of exemplified are triggers, because you've identified triggers. You know, you gave that trigger a name, that redhead, mm-hmm. you know? And you know, and we all have triggers. Like I hear this one song by Journey and I want to melt down because I broke up with a girlfriend and I went up to some canyon and sat by the river and played that song, felt sorry for myself. Now I hear that song, it's like, I'm so glad I dodged that bullet.
I know, right?
She was trouble.
We all have like James.
I think I know her.
Like James Taylor. I have a hard time listening. I love James Taylor, but that was like Nicole's favorite. So it's like, that's always, all have them. So it's all about like, you know, that's the magnificent thing about post-traumatic thriving, about the book. It's like, it walks you through the stages mm-hmm. of the, and it's all kind of like linear, except like the first five stages of grief, right? Because that's a roller coaster. But this is the reason why we have the podcast. So people understand, how did you do it?
You know. Speaking of books, I got a question for you, Pastor Phil. Which book did you write first?
The autobiography right there. Yeah.
Okay. So this book, the title is Forgive Me, Father, for I Have Sinned. You got to go online and find this book. The cover itself.
Yeah.
Either laugh or cry. It's intense. Just trust me on this one. If you're watching the video version, there it is. There's our pastor. You know, this is awesome. Tell us what inspired you to write this book. And I just want to emphasize the last 15 years for you, even though the prior time was, let's just say, rocky, ups and highs, 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 and lows, lows, lows. The last 15 years have kind of stabilized, you know?
Yes.
Yeah. So tell us about what we can learn as we read your book, Forgive Me, Father, for I Have Sinned.
Yeah, that's kind of my story, like I've shared a little bit with you today, just a little bit more in detail, chronologically, to my story of my life. And literally, I have sinned. So often I hear people blaming it on others. They push me into sin or I slip. No, for I have sinned. I have willfully chosen to do what I want to do and go against what I've heard is good advice from your word or from other people. Mm-hmm. And so that just kind of tells the story of my life. And I wrote this after the raid and after I started getting pointed in that right direction on a stable path, you know, building a good foundation. So for me, that's the whole construction part to me beginning to thrive.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
You know, the takeoff area for me.
Where can people find it?
I have a website, setfreeanaheim.com, and they can get that. I have a little 2-for-1 to get my books there together. And so at setfreeanaheim.com, and you know, you can hit me up there or Instagram, Phil Aguilar SF, and easy to find on there. And I'm very Googleable, so you know. People can see that I showed up on this.
We're not just talking about, you know, the arrest. We're talking about other things.
Yeah. So if you've enjoyed this interview, and I certainly have.
I have too.
And you want to get more into the I don't know if the right word is fun details, but the details. This is the book for you. And you got some pictures in here, and
yeah, I've even got some cool little pictures stuff back when I was young, and little stages. You know, sometimes I feel like I've led a lot of lives. So
you have. Don't think you have.
So there's some fun details in there about different things like that.
Awesome. Okay. Well, that first title is awesome. The second title of your second book, I just laughed. I'm still kind of laughing over your title, How to Build an Empire. that takes something to come up with that title, How to Build an Empire.
Now, everything.
You see the last part of it, though?
And How to Burn One Down.
And I think I'm better at the latter. So it just seems, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, my own wife, everything like that, In my house, I have pictures. I've spent time with Ronald Reagan, you know, Mike Tyson, you know, I've been fortunate enough, been blessed to meet all the people I want to meet and actually hang out with them and spend time. And people come up, man, how did you do this? How did you do that? Like I said, I'm one of those people. I never called in sick. I crawl in sick. You know, I get up every day, you know, learn the Carnegie thing, you know, wake up early, work hard and strike oil, you know, those type of things motivating, you know, and, you know, this whole little saying, you can't keep a good man down. Whatever it is, I'm up for it. I'm pushing myself, going for it. That old school mentality of just rocking and rolling and being resilient and, you know, so it's just been part of the life. So building an empire, like I said, I've got to build some great things and then watch burn them down, you know, and just that, you know, to know thyself, you know, like the great thinker, you know, that wisdom and stuff like that, getting a checkup from the neck up every morning, getting rid of that stinking thinking, you know, as a man thinketh, so with thee, all that, those type of things that are just propelled, you know, how words, communication and truths of, you know, like Jesus, when the disciples said, are you hungry? And he goes, no, I have meat that you know not of. There's just that value in the stimulating conversations and, you know, laying down, hugging a good book and, you know, getting built up and listening to that music that keeps you going, being around people that are motivators. And that's why, you know, this last part, when it came to the last part of thriving for my life, you know, I needed help to thrive. And so God doesn't, you know, drop things out of the sky. I believe he puts people in our lives, you know. Yeah. I never heard of post-traumatic thriving, you know, until recently. And I'm going, wow. Yeah, this is cool.
It's different.
Whatever it is. And so I sent to you, like, I go, I'm not sure if I understand what the question part of it is, because I've never took that way, you know, before. Yeah. You know, I've always down and dirty. And so, and I like it because sometimes you go, so what exactly does that mean? Because I got to remember a lot of times when I'm talking to kids, you know, and I'm telling them about Father Knows Best, they have no idea what Father Knows Best is, you know.
Yeah.
Or who Beaver Cleaver is, or right. Dennis the Menace, you know. So,
yeah.
Learning how to communicate.
Well, you know, you keep pressing through. And one of the things that you're teaching us, and hopefully is coming through loud and clear to the audience, is, and I say this repeatedly in my book, post-traumatic thriving is not a solo exercise. You cannot do it alone.
Yeah.
I've never met anybody that says, hey, I went through hell and look at me now. And I did it all by myself.
I'm doing great.
That never happened.
Yeah.
Never happened.
Never.
And it takes a team. It takes a village. It takes a neighborhood, whatever you want to call it. It takes a congregation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It takes support, because it's just too big of a load to carry by yourself.
Yeah.
And you've brought in chapter 11 of my book, it's on faith. And I get a lot of flack from my atheist and agnostic and, you know, secular naturalist friends, you know, over that. But the fact is, this is science. There's these guys out of University of North Carolina that have done statistical measures of those who have been through traumas and who's rebounded, you know, the term is resilience, and who have not. The common denominator in the thrivers is a faith in something bigger than themselves. You know, without that, you are the biggest thing.
Yeah.
And when you, then we get into the pride trap again,
right,
thinking we're
I got it.
Yeah, I got it.
Yeah.
Just to surrender to God or Jesus. And arguably that's the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Or a higher power.
Something.
I personally believe that God casts a very wide net. That's just my own personal belief mm-hmm. system. I try to not go on about it too much here on the show, but however you describe that, that's a really good, healthy thing.
Yeah.
And science has proven that statistically. And you've kind of exemplified that. And the fact that you have reached out and you listen to others and you're constantly, you seem very hungry to constantly learn some more, you know?
Oh, yeah.
You know, you're not like, I got it all figured out.
No, I'm a pig. Yeah. I want to get all I can and squeeze it all in.
Yeah.
It's like the movie. Did you see the movie The Shack?
Yeah.
I think so. Yeah.
You know, see, like when I read that book,
that's,
you know,
a Nicholas Sparks movie,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. When I read that book, you know, and then I says, hey, I had other people, hey, I'd like to read that. So I did book read. I never did that before mm-hmm. where I had a bunch of people want me to read the book to them.
Yeah.
So great. And then I see the movie. And the Holy Spirit is some good looking hot chick, you know, in the movie, at least to me, you know. Mm-hmm. And I'm going, oh my gosh, I love this, you know, Expanse Horizon. And then I'm dealing with a whole lot of lesbian community, gay community people nowadays, and everybody I talk to, you know, not just trying to be politically correct, but I go, you got a boyfriend or girlfriend, you know, it's just, you know,
yeah,
like top stuff. So I get a lot of good flack from, man. You know, you talk to those people, or your people, those people, because back in my day that I came from, the Baptist days, we were, you hate the sin, but not the sinner. I go, no, it seems like we hate the sin and the sinner.
Yeah.
You know, that's the way it appears to me. Matter of fact, this is a rougher gang than before I came to Christ.
Mm.
And so I went, you know, the whole love thing, man, like I said, I've been shooting up love, you know, after the cops did all that stuff, and I had that time. Mm-hmm. Those 3 days, I got my PhD in love. And every time, you know, if you want, I want the Mount Everest, and that's to try to love everybody. That's like climbing Mount Everest.
Yeah.
That's a big.
Yeah. Notice that, you know, just through our conversation, your darkest moments is when you abandon God. Your darkest moments. He was always there. And, you know, we're talking about faith, right? But your most beautiful moments is when he was there and you didn't abandon him. Right.
Yeah.
So that's the power of having some sort of spiritual faith.
You know, another thing on that same point though, when I'm not feeling well physically, that's when my prayers are increased. My prayer life increases, you know, when I'm broke, financially, that's when my prayer life increases. Whenever I'm going through a struggle, I pray more. Man, if God wants to get my attention, guess what I need to be doing?
Mm-hmm.
Going through more struggles, or they're a good thing for me because they cause me to draw closer to him. Now, at this stage of the game, I realize who it is and what he wants out of me. And I don't like it. I want the easy route, mm-hmm. you know, but it's definitely, I can see how God gets my attention.
Yeah.
Yeah. When your back is against the wall. I mean, during the a break, you asked me, I was sharing with you that in about 6 weeks, I'm headed up to Mount Everest.
I love the thought you actually really, there's a real, because I teach about it, but
there goes our podcast.
You know?
Well, I promise you, I'm going to take some pictures and videos specifically for you.
It was nice knowing you.
I mean, you actually plan on climbing it?
Yeah. Well, I'm going to stop at the highest base camp, because after that, it gets into what they call the death zone.
Yeah.
And that doesn't sound appealing to me.
No, that's like the crevasses and everything. Yeah.
You know, full disclosure, once I get to the highest base camp, I'm taking a helicopter the rest of the way. Full disclosure. But anyway.
Take a picture when you're up there from your heli.
You asked me a question, you know, why do you do that? And I'll tell you why. I kind of have a slogan in my head, and it's do hard things. Because when you do hard things, like get training for Mount Everest is a pain. I have to get up. I have to go running down to the beach and run in the sand, which is hard. It's hard to walk in the sand, let alone run in it. And going 4 or 5 miles, it's hard.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what you do when you do hard things? You complete the trauma loop. because it's it gets into the physiology of the brain, because when you have a trauma and you don't resolve it, it's stuck in your reptilian brain.
Yeah.
When you exercise or you hike or you do something difficult, it reboots the brain quite literally in terms of the neurology, and it makes life vibrant and enjoyable. I mean, yeah, it's kind of type two fun. It's not fun climbing Kilimanjaro or Everest, but when you get back, it's just
invigorating.
It's so thrilling. So to answer your question, that's why I do it. And it's why you do what you're doing. Mm-hmm. A lot of people, you know, our age, retired, you know, playing golf, I can't do that. I got to do hard things because it just makes life vibrant. You know, that's my theory.
Yeah, I like that because it reminds me of it. You want to be able to wear that t-shirt too.
Oh, yeah. You know,
I mean, why do you think I'm wearing the baggy stuff?
My wife and I, we went and did the climb Mount Sinai together. And, you know, so that's just, boy, I've been able to share that story 1,000 times over, you know. I mean, anybody can talk about a nice palm tree or the nice water, but I mean, just certain things that
people haven't done.
Yeah,
that's like, what? You know,
that's a big one. That's why I say that's a big one on the list.
But I have a now hard time I can just say going
I
upstairs.
Got a friend who he's playing mountain. He's going to
well,
Mount
Everest. Yeah, just not to overstate it. It's the base camp, but it is the highest base camp. The next stop after my stop is the peak. But my cardiologist said absolutely not. You will die. Yeah. So I'm stopping at a safe limit.
Are you going with friends?
Yes. Believe it or not, I do have a couple friends. And it was the same guy I climbed Mount Kilimanjaro with. And on the way down, we were so jacked on adrenaline that we had made it.
Because
it wasn't a hike. It was a death march. I mean, they didn't put that in the brochure, but it was tough. And on the way down, we were so jacked with our accomplishment. I said, you know, we ought to do Mount Everest. And my friend just wanted to throw a rock at me. And then he called me up like 3 years later and he says, hey, you know, I talked to my wife, let's go. As I go,
you're like, okay, now I got to talk to mine.
and a lot of people,
she would have said, no, I just did it.
A lot of people don't realize, you know, the thrill of those type of things. In 1992, I got on a thing where I was going to Israel every year for a season of time. 1992, the Gulf Wars happened there, and every Christian tour in the world, Mormons, Catholic, every Christian tour in the world, canceled their flights there, but one. And that was my separate crew. I had 55 of us. We flew in during the Gulf War when Katusha rockets were coming off from Lebanon, all that stuff.
Oh, wow.
And when we got to Tel Aviv, they gave us some stuff in case the gas has got, you know, some kind of stuff to save our life. But we were there just a few hours, and there was a peace treaty declared. We were the only tour group in all of Israel. For the next 10 days, we got treated like royalty, front page of the Merev Jerusalem newspaper, all that stuff. But you know how it is. You just go that extra mile or that extra thing. There's miracles around the corner type thing, you know. And it just stimulating in ways the words can't describe, no doubt.
Do hard things, baby. I love that.
I like
that.
Do you
still do those tours?
No, not anymore.
Talking into one more. I want to go.
Yeah, I know. I've got a crew right now who we're trying to work out of. We're just waiting for the last of the COVID tests and stuff like that, you know, because they were having heavy testing coming back over here.
Yeah.
But that's a fun one because it's all on who you go with.
Yeah, that's for sure.
You know what I mean? Because you could go to, don't matter, some famous place, but if you're with sour asses with you, you know.
Oh my God. It only takes one, too, to bring the whole thing down.
Yeah.
Yep.
You can just leave them.
Leave them back home.
Wow. So is that an answer that you may be doing another one in the future?
No, we're going to be doing another one. Now we're just working on the time.
We're going to sign up. I'll give you the deposit today.
Hey, listen.
I want to go with you. I want to party with you, man.
Hey, let me tell you. I got a buddy of mine that's going to go with us the next one, too. He's a psychologist. He's a biker guy, but he's a psychologist, PhD and all that kind of stuff and all that. Dr. Richie's his name. Just coolest tattooed guy you could ever meet in the world, like I says. But people that just thrive on in excitement and fun, you know, and seeing places and things like that. And,
Well, I've been to Israel once and Egypt and all that stuff. It is kind of sketchy there. I wandered into a combat zone by accident.
Whoa.
And that's a whole other story for another episode. But it is, I mean, when you're talking about the rockets coming in and all that, that's real stuff. I mean, it's
what you see on CNN, really crazy. Right?
You listen to the news differently over
there.
That's it.
There, yeah. No doubt. Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Whole different world.
So give us more of a sense of your guiding North Star and what that looks like in your head. That's kind of propelled you for the last 15 years in this solid, steady thing. Cause you know, I tell my kids all the time, the thing that I look for as a dad is stability, you know, making just reasonable decisions. Of course we make mistakes, but there's always this constant progression and purpose and achievement, and not necessarily achievement in the ways we might think about, but just this stability. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like the last 15 years have been very stable to you. So describe that North Star to us.
Yeah. When I go into fly someplace in an airplane, and back in my days, we called them stewardesses. And I think they're flight attendants, yeah. Something mm-hmm. like that. But when we're flying, like my wife, she likes to go to her Disneyland is Vegas. Okay. So we're going over to Vegas. And sometimes when it's hot winds or something like that, the plane rock and rolls. Mm-hmm. Now maybe everybody's this way, I don't know. But when the plane starts to rock and roll, who am I looking at? Not my wife, because she should be a wreck, you know?
God.
But I'm looking at the flight attendants. That's who I'm keeping my eye on. If they're cool, I'm cool. Right.
Yeah. You know? Simple. If they're knocking on the captain's door, there's a problem.
Yeah, you know? And so that's my whole point in life, being stability. When all others are losing their heads around, keeping mine. So when I went through my 3 days in the whale's belly, got out, fought the next 2 years, just getting rid of that, moving that on to start my next step, that's where I started my foundation. And I realized what I needed to do is I needed to clear my stinking thinking. I needed to really get to know myself. Why is it I keep getting myself up and then down? Build an empire, then blow it up. Mm. Build it up, knock it down. You know, why do I keep doing that? And, you know, I learned that from the Bible part of my life, you know, I've learned that there's the greatest gift is the gift of love. It's the only gift that never fails. So I said, okay, that sounds good on paper. What does that mean, God? And God says, I want you to, you've heard of professional basketball players, professional golfers, people that are pros at some. Mm-hmm. And God challenged me, and I don't know where it came from, like I says, just from somehow God challenged me to become a professional forgiver. Hmm. Because around me, my wife, everybody was pissed off at the cops and people. How could they, you know, that was terrible. That was wrong. How could they do this to you and your family? You know, they made you go broke, all that stuff. And me, I said, I want to be a professional forgiver. And God literally, you know, it might sound like the who, funny kind of stuff, but he gave me like five names. I want you to call these five people and tell them you're sorry about the way you messed with them or told them off or burnt them or whatever you did. I want you to call them. And I was hoping to get their voice message, you know, so I could say, hey, I just want to tell you, I'm sorry, man. You know what? You know, I was wrong. You know, I want to ask for your forgiveness. And he gave me five different people. And like I said, I wanted them not to answer their phones. You know, I wanted the easy route, but they answered. And then one of the persons said, man, you're asking for forgiveness? Man, how cool. Okay. And then he calls me back 5 minutes later. He goes, F you, man, I ain't forgiving you for what you did to me, you know? And then another lady on there that I called up, you know, she goes, my gosh, that's so cool. And I started the beginning, which was my being a professional forgiver. My mom gets cancer. And the doctors tell her, you got to start on chemo. And she goes, no, thank you. I've lived a good life. I'm 84 years old, man. I'll just do the treatment at home, you know, what they call it.
Hospice
at home. And I said, okay, mom, you know, so what do you want, mom? She goes, I want you to invite all of my friends. And my mom worked for the last 42 years, state of California, as a job counselor. She's got thousands of people jobs. She goes, I want everybody that likes me to come over and say goodbye to me.
Aww.
So I became the door person at her house, having people every day, 2, 3, 10 people come over every day to say goodbye to her, give her last hugs. She lived, they told her she lived about 90 days. So about 60 days, she was pretty coherent. People coming over. I answered that door for people that talk shit about me. I answered that door for people that I couldn't stand, make me want to throw up. But what it was my challenge to myself to become a professional what?
Forgiver.
Forgiver. How do you become good at anything except for doing it over and over and over? So here I'm going, oh, Lord, you got me on this one. This is a mother. And so I did that for the next 2 months, you know, did her funeral, her little service. But it was the beginning, the foundation of being a professional forgiver. And when you're forgiving people, you know, you nobody's got free rent in your mind.
Right.
You know, because that person who's got free rent in your mind that you can't stand or anything like that, you think you're doing them wrong, but you're allowing them to ruin your day, ruin your night, ruin your life. And so that was the foundational beginnings of after getting out of jail there, after beating the case, if you would, there, I was able to have a purpose. What I'm working, I got to have something to get up. When I, my grandkids in the morning, they live at my house. Hey, it's time to go to school. They don't want to do it. But if I tell them, hey, it's time to go to Disneyland, you know, they got a purpose and a reason to get up. So I figure if that works on them, guess who else it works on? Me, you know? And so that's my purpose. I'm getting up. I'm forgiving. I'm moving on. At first, I'll tell them, okay, I'm going to forgive him, but I'm not going to forget. Okay, I'm going to forgive and forget. Okay, I'm going to forget, but I'm not going to take him out to eat. Okay, I'm going to forget and take him out to eat. I'm going to forgive, take him out to eat, but I'm not going to pay. Okay, I'm going to pay too, do all that. Little baby steps along the way to here. I've been doing that since I got released out of there all the time. When people bring it up, well, these people said this about you. Hey, well, let's pray for them. And not in any saintly way, but through hardship, through toils and terrors, you know, going through this type of thing to the point, you know, to, you know, my own kids will go, don't ask my dad what he thinks about them. I mean, he'll find something good in everybody. I mean,
that's such a bad thing.
That's really a wonderful tribute to you.
Absolutely.
I mean,
it's pretty special.
It's, you know, but I get it because you can go from, you know, one phase to another, but it's just one of those things where, I mean, it's reality. And the point of it is I'm not really like a great guy trying to do it for everybody else. Hey, I like to feel good. I like to feel happy. So, you know what? Well, what makes you feel good and happy? That's why Danny Trejo, nice, you know, everything he said that's ever happened to him, good, because he's nice to people.
Yeah.
What a great thing.
Yeah.
What a, you know, what a unreachable habit to pick up.
Yeah.
You know, be nice to people.
So just be good to people. You're leaving a wonderful legacy. You got tears going in my eyes now.
It's a profound lesson because we live in this world that's just, you know, up to our eyeballs in materialism and
anger
and
hate.
Anger and depression and going for the next cheap thrill. And what you're talking about is the real deal.
Yeah.
You know.
So here I am. So here I am now. I'm off on that thing like that. And the houses that got raided, I said, okay, the ministry part, the Christianese part and all that kind of stuff, you know, hey, a lot of people, man, what's going on? You know, I still meet people, and it was 15 years ago. I still meet people that could happen today in different places. They go, hey, Pastor Phil, man, you just get out. They think that I got locked up and in their belief system, because the front pages, the news pages, remember those things, newspapers? They used to be not, you know, not articles, sections, you know, all this kind of stuff, you know, and just, you know, internet, all this stuff like that. They go, so you just got out? And a lot of times now, you know, I don't, you know, want to, I'm not going to give them a whole post-traumatic thriving program, you know, but I go, yeah, it wasn't bad, you know, it's okay. Because that's still where it was left off for a lot of people. But the cool part was, is I go, okay, here we go. I realize people think that stuff like that. So I'm not going back to Christianity in the same way I was before that bust. I've learned a whole lot through that, you know? And so I said, man, you know, I'm always working with, seems like God always sends me drug addicts to work on. And so I took the same house while I was on probation, and I applied for a state California license of drug and alcohol at the time is what it was, to get the place licensed to have it as a detox center. And on probation, sometimes the right hand doesn't know what the left hand's doing. That place became a state licensed, my first drug alcohol treatment center, you know, respected by the laws, the courts of the land. And I'm cracking up because I'm going, don't they know I'm on probation? I mean, you know, I mean, in here, I'm the same one that they're trying to lock away for life. And now they're giving me a state license to, you know, work. In other words, the whole neighborhood can say anything they want, but there's no way they can stop me from that when you get that license.
Yeah.
And so that turned into a treatment center. And that's the beginning of what the whole ministry that I do now is working with drug, alcohol addicts, you know. You know, people with eating disorders, all that kind of stuff, you know, all started out of that. I would have never done that. I would have stayed the same old churchy way, where I call it evangelistically speaking all the time. And we had close to 1,000 there. You know, we had all this there, you know. You know, when God wants to know, how's that one person doing?
Yeah.
What's that?
Yeah.
And now I get to do little small groups, you know, because when you're, you know, I was a spectator sport before. I speak, you guys listen, don't ask no questions.
Yeah.
You come in, you know, and go out. Now all these groups are discipleship groups, you know, how are you doing? Taking notes on them. You know, actually, if it ain't documented, it didn't happen, all that type of stuff. So this is like real life after the spectator sport of preaching or knowing all the right jokes to say to the crowd and all that kind of stuff. But, once again, you know, for me, it's a kind of, you know, I get high with a little help from my friends. So when different people come into our lives, the reason I bring up Tim Story's name is because he's one of those people, you know, that, you know, I knew about his life, but I was doing okay. It's like being alive and thriving. There's a difference. I was doing okay, got the place license. I'm doing okay. And I heard Tim Story was doing a meeting in Hollywood. So I'm going to go up to his meeting in Hollywood because I heard they're good, motivational, powerful meetings. So I go up there, take a couple of my buddies there. And this was probably, I don't know, probably seven years ago now. And I'm here at this meeting, and Tim Story gets up there and he goes, he's got a little cool band going. He's not like your typical.
Yeah.
Christian guy. He's kind of like a cool flavor and vibe. And because he Robert Downey Jr., he helps all those kind of people like that. So we go, hey, here we got Kanye West here tonight. Everybody, you know, everybody's clapping. Cool. Kanye West is there. My friend Smokey. Hey, Smokey Robinson, how you doing over there? He's that guy. That's Tim. You know, so I go up there, like I said, approximately 7 years ago, and I'm doing okay. Life's okay, you know? And then all of a sudden I hear Tim go, we have a living legend in the room here tonight. And I'm, oh, shit. Man.
Who?
Yeah, you know, I'm looking around the room, you know, and I'm going, oh, this could be cool, because I always knew that he has famous people, you know, in the place. So and then he mentions my name, and he starts talking all this good stuff. So once again, it's one of those things, you know, back from when I told you, when I said, hey, I need your help, or Janice, hey, you're more like Jesus. I don't know about y'all, but like I said, there's just certain times when people can say something, it, you know, that's just encouraging. It's building up, you know, and he goes, man, this guy, I watched him on TBN. He used to inspire me back in the day, you know, and he's still doing it today.
Awesome.
And I'm going, I went from alive to thrive. I'm going, yeah, because sometimes we can forget ourselves, you know?
Yeah.
And another little reminder. So just knowing, I go, man, pass that on to somebody else, you know? see somebody doing good. You see somebody at work. It's like I have a few people, it's one place I work at, and they're mad at the boss. I said, well, don't take it out on the clients. Can you imagine working at Taco Bell and you hate your boss, or you're going to spit in everybody's food that comes by and the thing? Hey, 80% of the people in America go to work on Monday mornings hating their boss, hating mm-hmm. their job. But don't rob the clients, you know, that whole type of thing. Right. So getting that whole Chick-fil-A mentality, I call it my pleasure. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't have to go to work. I get to go to work.
Right.
I'm glad to be here, you know, that type of thing. Adding that in with having cell groups, smaller groups, one-on-ones, you know, asking questions like we're talking about today, you know, real questions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, hey, how's it going? Oh, I'm feeling good.
I'm okay. Feeling fine.
Yeah,
that's, you know, the F word.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and and so yeah, so this that was that little time in there, but being a professional forgiver. Oh my God, that's taken me now some years, and then Tim's story adding on that part. So Tim wanted to start a church. So you know, I know about helping to start churches. I've done plenty of that. So he started one over his house, and so I became the greeter out front, you know, hey, good to have you here, because you know, everybody looks for their spot. Mm-hmm. And then he rented a high school, Valencia High School in Placentia.
Mm.
And so I go out in the parking lot, I give myself a pointed job because I can see a need and fill it, and I don't need a title or a badge, you know, and just greeting people in. Yeah. You know, and so the people that he ministered to, I get to know them from the parking lot, you know, get to watch the one who they pull in with, what kind of car they pull in with. Did they smack the girl before they got out of the car? Right. Did they yeah. smoke this before they got out of the car? This, you know, just getting to know the audience, because I get them before they
go in,
get you a little religious, mm-hmm. you know, going in, because every place has got rules. Take off your hat. Don't do this. Don't drink coffee. We got carpet, you know, all that mm-hmm. stuff. But outside in the parking lot, there's still a little bit of freedom left, you know, of being able to put out the last weed or whatever that I can. So they get me out there, and they figure I'm some hoodlum out there anyway, and it just works out great. But I got to, you know, you get to meet all those people that are coming in, and then being at the same place saying goodbye to them, just
mm-hmm.
part of, you know, what some people, oh, they're so humble. No, it's a fun thing to do.
Yeah.
You know, it's, you know.
It brings you joy.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and you look for your fix. You know, some people are happy they get to teach a Sunday school class, or some people are glad they get to do the music. You know, just find that purpose.
Yeah.
Once again, you know, that's why Rick Warren's book, Purpose Driven Life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, you got to, what's your reason for getting up? You don't have a reason. I can remember the days my mom said, get your lazy ass up. What for? You know, if there isn't something to get up for, so.
Exactly.
Finding a purpose. So yeah, that was my thing that got me into the thriving life, the beginnings, you know, professional forgiver, you know, loving people where they're at, you know, enjoying the ride, just, you know, enjoying the ride. You know, not tripping out.
Yeah.
And so probably the hardships along this part of the journey are, you know, just is realizing you got to love people where they're at, because it's, anybody can quote things or say things. And, you know, it's like first time I remember hearing somebody say, hey, just give it to the Lord. Yeah, that sounds good. Where's he at? You know, I'd love to, you know, I mean, all this Christianese is so much bullshit,
mm-hmm.
you know, or hey, you give your life to Jesus, no more problem. Bullshit.
Whoa.
You know, I mean, you know, just so much, you know, from my fellow peers, you know, I'm going, nah, I ain't buying any of that stuff, you know, and it's just, you know, my team's better than your team, you know, or my sin's bigger than your sin. And, you know, and so, you know, and it's equal opportunity, just loving everybody where they're at. Mm-hmm. And, well, what does God think about that? I'm not sure. Like I said, I've changed my mind so many times, that, you know, and people go,
ask them.
Yeah.
I think we live in a very thirsty world. People just, they're not being acknowledged enough. You know, there's this little blue ribbon. And it says who I am makes a difference. And I think I'm going to get some more. And because people need to know who they are, does make a difference. Whether you have a full-time job, whether you're a nanny, whether you're a housewife, people need to know, they need to be acknowledged. And the power behind that little blue ribbon, oh. I'll share that with you sometime. Because people need love. They need to feel accepted. We're thirsty for that. especially one with social media. I think it all kind of started there, you know, and then at the pandemic, it's like people were isolated, you know, not connecting, you know, so people need that love again. They always have, but now we're finally talking about it.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Well, there's a thirst. That's a good word. And I loved your answer to my question about your North Star, because what I'm kind of sensing is that thirst is for exactly what you just delivered. Yeah. And that is a mature faith, not a faith driven by a bunch of ulterior motives, but by genuine love, genuine concern and empathy, genuine forgiveness.
Yeah.
I think it's important to realize that the world is full of lots of interesting people. Some have our better interests at heart and some are predators.
Mm-hmm.
And frankly, we got to call out the bad guys and the bullies, which is unpleasant. So I'm not trying to sugarcoat things. I don't think you are either.
Mm-hmm.
But the overriding North Star should be that sense of purpose, that sense of forgiveness, that sense of empathy and love. I think that was really a beautiful sermon.
Yeah.
You know, some really wonderful thoughts.
Yep.
We want to respect your time. You've been very, very generous in sharing your story. I just want to tell you that you always have the welcome mat out in terms of coming back if there's anything you want to share. Because I sense that you're never going to retire.
No. What is that?
Yeah, and I'm not either. I mean,
you know, before we close, talk about the Magic House, because I've mentioned it a few times, but you know, your door is always open. But I want people to know that, you know, people who are either struggling with drugs and alcohol, and I'm going to cry, or they're in recovery, or they're, the last time I was there, I sat back on a bench with this kid who was just sitting by himself, and I just wanted some shade. And he's like, I've never been here. I don't know anyone. And his name was Kevin. And every once in a while, we still text, you know, so there's so much joy that you bring to so many people who are struggling, because I'm telling you, that place is fun. Well, so what kind of activities do you do there? And
yeah, well, the Magic House is, like I says, nowadays you can Google the Magic House in Anaheim and it comes up as a place, you know?
Yeah.
It's funny, but it's my house where I actually live. And, you know, to me, being a good steward of what God's given me, you know, I utilize that place. I live there, but it's my resource center. It's my center of the universe there. And people that I've helped get off drugs have helped me build the whole place. They've chipped in, worked together. And so it's built just for what it's utilized for, people coming together. I do have a disclaimer sign, just like on medicine and stuff like that. I tell men, especially, you know, who come there, that all the women here, the fruit is not all ripe. Mm-hmm. And so be careful, you know, you could meet a girl. She's got 10 days clean. You got 10 days clean. You guys think that you're ready to take off and conquer the world, you know, but, she's just new in her recovery. And I said, there may be people here that you owe money to, pay up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe people here, your future ex you're going to meet, watch out, you know. But when you come to this area, it's all about love, forgiveness, no judgment zone. And I'll have called different people up to share their stories. And you're going to have a whole lot of, like I said earlier, the Me Too movement, people going, yeah, me too. Mm-hmm. Because people, you look at them and you go, oh, you've been through that? Man, I can't believe that.
Mm-hmm.
It's a place, you know, where it's against the rules on that corner of the world to not be a builder up of people unless you're there just learning, coming there. But we have people with every belief system. You come there and like I says, my purpose is to just to try to spread the love of God here.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we're nobody special. We're just people that come together here. And so, you know, whether it's the food we bring, get togethers,
good
the
food,
that we
good
do,
music.
Yeah, good music. You know, you can just be you.
Yeah.
You just be you. And we give acknowledgement to those that are not clean, you know, give acknowledgement to those that got their 30 day clean, you know. And every level's a little different level there, you know. We celebrate birthdays, you know, and celebrate sober days and all the above, you know, whatever you're doing. And so, you know, my number is 714-400-4573 is my first number. People go, man, well, I bet you have everybody in the world calling you. No, a lot of people would be influenced to call, but they won't all because not everybody's ready.
Yeah.
They're just not ready for that. Mm-hmm. But it's there for them when they are ready. Mm-hmm. We have a detox ranch in Lake Elsinore where we send people. It's Beans and Rice Jesus Christ program. You don't have to worry about meds because there's no meds there. You know, you don't have to worry about Netflix because no TV's there. You know, you don't have to worry about your phone chargers because no phones, you know, but it's free. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a good place to go. Mm-hmm. And then we have a liftoff detox where we actually have a detox where we have our doctors and, you know, meds and assistants and people that have insurance programs. So we help people that way. Just any way we can, you know, help people, whether it's helping them find housing, find jobs. We have people who started a thing called the Fight Club over at Cypress College, and people are learning how to get grants and how to get a computer, you know, all this type of stuff so people can get some education. I mean, you name it, we'll find a way to be able to help out. And there's no hidden agenda, just seeing lives change. I mean, we've got people who are the biggest rascals in the world who are just doing dynamic, wonderful things, you know, like the Faustos and all them. You know, I get to work with all the those in their 30s and those in their 40s. And, you know, when they think they're so old, I go, imagine, you know, I never thought I'd be around this long. But, you know, it's this is purpose, just watching you grow and then learning how to count one, 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 you know, everybody's super special, you know. And so, hey, it's an open house. Feel free to call, free to come by and just any kind of help that we could give.
Yeah.
We're there for you. Like I said, we got a big skateboard event coming up the end of this month, you know, where we have sponsors of skateboard companies giving skateboards away and things and contests. And we just try to do things where people can come and we don't want anything from you. Just want you to come and enjoy yourself. And we'll have somebody share words of wisdom from different, you know, lifestyles, different backgrounds. And, you know, the shoe fits, put it on and, you know. God bless you.
You're a good man.
And God bless you. And, and that's Sundays at 7 o'clock.
Yeah, Sundays at 7 o'clock.
Do you let tall white guys in
with no tattoos?
You know, well, you guys are. You got to remember you white
stick out like a sword.
White thumb. People. I know when you're down here in you know this part of South County, you know, when you come my it's like my wife. She goes, I'm the only white person here. Almost every place we go. And so I said, over there, you guys are becoming extinct. So, you know, they're going to be eBaying you pretty soon. So we just love to have you. You know, being on.
It sounds like my kind of place, quite honestly. It's when Fausto told me about the, I thought, man, I'm.
And when I say fun, it's the energy. The energy is like so, it's, you know, for a lack of better terms, it's like on high. It's like the energy is so incredible. The people there, they're genuine. You know, they're there for either they need to connect or maybe they need help and support to get sober. But it's just, I can't explain it. It's like, you got to experience it.
No, I'm going to. I recently moved. I was up near Saddleback and I'm down here back in Laguna Beach. And I think everything you are saying is vibing, you know, I'm kind of picking up what you're laying down. I'm loving it. And I hope you'll take us up on the open invitation to come back anytime.
Yeah.
No, I appreciate that.
A lot of wisdom.
Well, this has been very cool. And I know, my gosh, you're beautiful people. I mean, just thank you.
You're welcome.
Well, thank you. Yeah,
thank you.
Love to have you back and get these books, How to Start an Empire. I can't wait to start my empire. And forgive me, Father, for I have sinned.
Love that picture.
That's awesome.
Back when I was younger.
Get Tanya's book, Finding Peace Amid the Chaos.
Right here.
Yeah, there you go.
I call this my real estate picture because it's like 10 years old, maybe even 15.
There you go. Well, I wouldn't dare put a picture of me on my book, but it's Post-Traumatic Thriving and all 400 pages of it. And there's a quiz every Thursday. So anyway, thank you.
This has been great. Thank you so much, Chief. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank all of you guys. Absolutely. Here on Post-Traumatic Thriving, where we dive, survive, or thrive.
The choice is yours.
See you next time.
Thanks for supporting our podcast. Be sure to like, share, and subscribe, and follow us on your favorite social media. For books, merchandise, or to donate, visit coreiq.com. Post-Traumatic Thriving is produced by CoreIQ, a nonprofit with a mission to teach the life skills we all need but are not taught in school. CoreIQ and the Post-Traumatic Thriving podcast are for informational purposes only and do not provide medical or mental health advice. Always consult with your licensed medical and mental health care providers.